This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNW.
Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, buddy, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm your host, Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by John Bubb. How you doing, John?
Hello.
How's everything?
Ed's going good. How about you?
Not bad. Things are, the weather's cooling down a little bit. We're in September. September 4th. It's my brother's 21st birthday today. And I'm so glad the summer is over because it is unbearable. I say this every single year, and I will continue to say it. It is unbearable.
So
it's really unbearable to do a show.
You're in the studio like for an hour.
Yeah,
each
but
day.
It's like being in a sauna for an hour. It's
well,
brutal.
That's good for you. Saunas are good for you. You sweat it out.
I don't want to sweat anything out.
You got your own sauna inside your house.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
A lot of people would pay money for that.
I guess so, but it's not really good when you're trying to think and do a show. That's the only issue. I got to think here. We have a lot to talk about. You know, next week's the Apple event, and I want to discuss that. Some hardware
less
got announced.
A week away.
I know. It's crazy. It's happening again.
I'm excited.
I think this one's going to be a bigger event than the previous one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were pros and cons to what Apple did last year. Where the biggest feature was the change in size. The fact that they had the 4.7 inch version and the 5.5 inch version. That was the big feature. There really wasn't a whole lot else besides that changed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I want to talk about it, but let's take a moment here and talk about our sponsor. They've been supporting the show for a while. They are good friends of ours, and I know a lot of our viewers have signed up for the service, which is always great to hear, and that's Braintree. If you're working on a mobile payment system for your business, for your website, for your application, look no further, because Braintree is the place to go. Here's a great thing before I go into telling you who's using it. Actually, I'll tell you now. Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, the list goes on and on. These are companies that you know and you trust, and they trust Braintree, which is a PayPal company, by the way. Why should you use Braintree? Well, what it does, it accepts every kind of payment you could possibly imagine. PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, every kind of credit card, all different types of currencies. It has superior fraud protection, customer service, and humongously fast payouts. So you don't have to sit there and wait for your payout from the company. To learn more about the service and to get your first $50,000 in transaction fees for free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNW. That's braintreepayments.com/TNW. One of my friends, he's an app developer, and he just implemented Braintree for a new company. They actually make hats.
Fantastic.
They make hats, John.
Everybody loves a hat.
They make hats, and they actually heard about it on the show, and he goes, oh, my God, it was the easiest thing I ever did. It's a couple pieces of code, couple lines. I think it's like 10 lines of code, and you're up and running. You're good to go. Braintreepayments.com/TNW. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the GFK Network and Tech News Weekly. So, John, let's talk about this. Apple event next Tuesday.
List.
Obviously, we're going to get a new iPhone 6S and a 6S Plus. Mm-hmm. The rumors are that it's going to have 4K capabilities, upgraded 12-megapixel camera in the back, 5-megapixel front-facing camera in the front, with a front-facing flash, a stronger aluminum body, amongst many other new features. We may even see something about force-touch iPhones. Obviously, at the event, we're going to get a few more hints here. What can you tell us about this, John?
Pretty much what you said. I mean, it's all rumors at this point. There's nothing confirmed. There's always sources out there that say, well, we can confirm that it's going to have this and this and this. One of those companies is KGI, and they're a little bit more reputable. And they're definitely confirming that there's a 5-megapixel front-facing camera.
Which makes sense.
Which is
about time
that they upgraded these cameras on the iPhone.
I mean, the iPhone stuff all makes sense to me, right? Like, everything that they're kind of announcing and they're kind of talking about is all stuff that we expect to happen. I don't think asking for a 5-megapixel front-facing camera is a crazy thing. I don't think asking an upgraded 12-megapixel.
I don't think it would be crazy asking for an 8-megapixel front-facing camera.
Yeah, well, Apple will not. Apple doesn't agree with you there because they're going with a 5-megapixel front-facing camera.
Well, look how long they stuck with an 8-megapixel camera.
Also, 16 gig will be the base model. A lot of rumors were coming out that 32 or 64 would have been the base. No, 16 gigs. Already, we are getting rumors about the iPhone 7, which will debut in 2016. And the rumors are that it's going to be bezel-less, an all-glass design. So does that make you...
You're the one that's always complaining about bezels on these things.
Yeah, you were going to say something else there. That I do something else about the bezel. So here's a good question for you. Is that, knowing that that may be a possibility, is that enough for you to say, well, you know what, I may hold off and get an iPhone 7?
No.
You don't care for that?
No. Doesn't do anything for me. I mean, it'd be nice, but it's not something that's going to stop me from not wanting to upgrade. Some of the big things to me is the size and the cameras. Last year we got the size upgrade, which a lot of people wanted. Yes, they sort of did that with the going from the 3.5-inch version to a 4-inch version, but that was just kind of a cop out because they only changed
It wasn't like a big one.
Yeah. So I sort of wanted to do it last year, but they're just, you know, for the price, it just wasn't worth it. I mean, I wanted to wait until, you know, I can get the upgraded camera and the upgraded size.
Sure, I mean,
it sounds like it is going to be the success.
Which will be the success. Couple other things about this event. It is also rumored that we may get a glimpse of the iPad Pro, which will be a larger size iPad, something to kind of compete with a Surface. I do believe that we're going to see that device, if I was going to take a guess right now. Also, new Apple TV, something that we have been talking about for a long time. Everything is hinting that we are going to see a new Apple TV this year.
I don't know about either of these.
Okay, tell me why.
Both of these items have been rumored for so long. We've seen these rumored for like a good 2-3 years now.
Absolutely.
Or at least 2 or 3 of these keynotes that they've gone through. And it's like, okay, well, at WWDC, we're expected to see the iPad Pro and an Apple TV refresh. Nope, didn't see that. And that's happened a couple of times. So it's one of those, you know, crying wolf things, or fool me once, fool me twice.
Yeah.
Now it's like, all right, well, if it happens, it happens. But it's not one of those things where, you know, there's a big expectation. It's like, all right, well, whatever at this point.
Yeah, Curtis.
That's where I'm at with both of these products and the announcements or impending announcement. It's just like, all right, well, if they do, they do. So what?
Curtis B in our chat room makes a good point. He says it makes sense for them to announce it now with their recent deal with Cisco and partnering with IBM. I do see that being part of this. They want to really penetrate the enterprise market. This is something different. I don't think it's going to be for the consumer. I don't think they're going to really want to get this. Is it going to be a 13-inch tablet with a dockable keyboard? I would love something like that from them. We just have to wait and see what happens. Now, the other thing here is the rumor about the Apple TV. The rumors are that it's going to cost between $149 to $199. I think it's going to be $149. And the interface and the app store and everything is going to open up, and it's going to be kind of what every tech pundit has been talking about for the last 3 years about Apple TV.
I'll tell you what, though, if it's more than $149, I think they're going to have a problem.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
Because what we've seen from this set-top box market is the sweet spot is $99. People gobbled up, you know, Rokus at $99. People gobbled up Fire TVs at $99.
99 or under. Yeah.
Yes. So for Apple to go above that mark, I think they can get away with it a little bit, but they're really going to have to offer people real good reason for, you know, going with an Apple TV
for
other
$200.
Than it being an Apple TV.
Yeah, for $200.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, enough, you know, you're paying a premium for an iPhone versus an Android, but I think there's still a bit of a difference between a Roku or a Fire TV and an Apple TV, because it's still more of a niche market, I think.
I think what they're going to do is sell this thing for $149 and then eventually drop the price.
Personally, I don't know that I could justify spending quite that much money for something that is so locked in compared to something like a Fire TV or
yeah,
a Roku.
That's the question here, right? If it is locked in, I agree with you 100%. If it's not locked in, where you're going to have access to apps and games and they kind of sell it as if it's a, you know, a lower end console. They have this tremendous app library on the tablet.
I don't think gaming has ever been that great on a set top box, though.
No, nobody has done it well. You're absolutely right. But they have an opportunity.
I don't think there's that big of a market for gaming on a set top box like that.
I don't know.
I mean, you saw the Ouya, which was specifically for that purpose, yeah. And it failed miserably.
Yeah, it failed because they didn't have the library and they didn't have the development on that platform. And it was a no-name company at the end of the day. With Apple having the accessibility to developers, and we have seen the model work on the phone and on the tablet, I think developers will jump at the idea that they could also sell a TV version of their games. I think a game like... I'm trying to come up with the game right now. It was like a fighting game they had a couple years ago. It was a big deal. Someone in the chat room helped me.
Fruit Ninja.
Fruit Ninja will not work on the TV. They could come up with like a Dr. Mario style Fruit Ninja, but if it's like a side scroller, if it's a fighting game, I think it would do phenomenal. I think this is a whole market, an entire market that Apple has not tapped into that they could see a lot of success.
But everybody just does such a mediocre job at it.
Yeah, they do right now.
And they'll come out with like a game controller. Amazon did that with the Fire TV for gaming, but it's so mediocre at best.
Yeah, because development,
and I think
the apps
that's the biggest problem is that you're only going to do something that's mediocre. If you want serious gaming, you're getting an Xbox or a PlayStation.
I think for a casual gamer or a kid, I think something like this would work if it's a lower end console. But they have to kind of sell it as that. And I don't know if Apple's going to do that.
It's only going to be casual gaming, and it's going to be for those people that, you know, have a kid that they just want to sit in front of a TV and give them some sort of game. You know, like if they're 7 to, you know, 10 years old, they can sit them down and have them play some sort of casual game.
I mean, I would be more likely to play a game on my Apple TV if I had, you know.
It's weird.
I definitely would do it. So I'm curious to see how they play this out. It's up in the air right now. Reportedly, it's going to ship sometime in October. We're going to find out on Tuesday. Apple did just create a new gaming Twitter account, says Curtis B. That is interesting, isn't it? I saw that reported yesterday on 9to5 Mac. So that's another thing to consider here. So since we're talking about the set-top boxes, John, I want to mention this. I don't know how much a lot of people will care at this point, but Hulu has an ad-free subscription now. And I have to tell you, the viewing experience on Hulu is night and day now. I've been binge-watching Seinfeld for the last 2 days. I got it, by the way. It's $4 more, so instead of spending $8, you're spending $12 a month. But it's ad-free. You don't have to deal with, you know, a mid-roll and a pre-roll.
Wait a minute. Ad-free, yeah. Asterisk.
Why is that?
Because there's caveats to this.
Okay.
There's two caveats to this.
Okay.
One, that is that it's not ad-free for every show. There are certain shows, namely seven big shows right now that it is not ad-free for.
So we're talking about Grey's Anatomy, Once Upon a Time, Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Scandal, Grimm, The New Girl, and How to Get Away with Murder. Majority of these are ABC shows.
Mm-hmm.
I believe just The New Girl is not an ABC show, and that's a Fox show. So that's interesting. I wonder why. I guess the ABC did not opt in for this.
And the second caveat here is that if you sign in with your cable subscription, mm-hmm. your cable provider can also insert ads.
How would you sign in with your cable subscription?
It's to unlock content that is only available to cable subscribers.
Is that a feature
like
that's
HBO and Showtime?
On Hulu. I've never attempted that. I've never attempted to access HBO or Showtime shows.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And there's certain shows that you can only access if you sign in with your cable subscriber, like a Comcast or Time Warner, and they have the ability to insert ads. So there are caveats to this. Okay. Not every show is free.
I have yet to experience one with an ad. I mean, I have only watched a couple shows on there. I want to say three shows. Seinfeld, South Park, and I can't remember what the other one was that I watched, but I've watched two or three shows, and there have been no ads. Now, I did experience a couple issues where it's trying to play an ad. So the way that it works, John, is that when you start the show, it'll still do like loading for like a second, and then it'll go.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's trying to get at network information about your account. And then whenever it says like bypass the ad, it bypasses it. But I was stuck on that the other night. And it wouldn't bypass. It would endlessly say loading until I restarted.
That's annoying.
The app. So I did have that issue. I mean, I'm sure they're going to work it out and it's going to be fine. But this is interesting. I wonder how this impacts people's perception of Hulu, because there are so many people out there that have Netflix and they've tried Hulu and they have turned their subscriptions off to Hulu because of the ads.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm thinking about is that if we see major success with Hulu with this, does Netflix now say, well, what if we offered a lower package for $6.99 and you have ads now on Netflix? I can't see that happening. There will be many people out there that would rather... I think, listen, Netflix, here's the trick, guys. They want you to have ads. Netflix is dying to have ads on their videos. It is worth more. This is a Hail Mary pad. This is a Hail Mary play for Hulu to entice people to sign up for their service for $12. Because the way that they see it is they are now losing money because you are never trying them. Netflix, on the other hand, is losing money by not having ads.
I don't think they're necessarily losing money, because they've got a lot of freaking money that they're playing with right now.
They have a lot of money, sure, but they are hitting everybody that has Netflix now. But I'm trying to articulate this in a weird way. So okay, here's the thing. Okay, if we had a subscription model, for example, right? Like we have a subscription model where our viewers pay us $12.99, and we don't have any ads on the network.
Yes.
You now max out on that.
Okay.
You hit the wall eventually. If you have ads, you are able to generate more revenue than the $12 a month on that viewer by having ads.
I don't necessarily
ads.
Buy all that.
I've looked at a lot of the strategies with marketing and ad revenue, and I can't see any business just doing subscriptions at the price that they're doing it without any kind of ads. I think we're going to see some ad insertion. I don't think we're going to get mid-rolls, but I do see a company like Netflix saying, okay, well, you know what? We're going to offer a lower package, but you could get ads. You're going to have ads on those.
But see, my thing is if there's going to be any ads at all, then I don't want to pay any money.
But if...
You know, even if it's, you know, $3.99 or $4.99 a month, if there's going to be ads, I'm not paying it.
I don't think they would do $3.99. I would see them doing, I don't know, let's say the starting is $8.99. I see them doing like $6.99 or $7.99. No, there are people out there. You wouldn't, and I wouldn't. But you wouldn't, and I wouldn't. But I can tell you, there will be people out there that say, well, I don't care about the ads. I'll save a dollar or two here. Just another.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I could see that happening.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Or they do ads on their original programming.
There's just not enough savings there for something like that, in my opinion.
No, not for you. Not for me. I'm sure there will be some people.
They're stupid for it, then.
Well, yeah.
And and this is coming from somebody that's cheap.
You're very cheap.
I myself am cheap.
You are very cheap. You recycle coffee grinds.
It's not like I'm saying these people are any cheaper. It's just, you know.
I see. The way that I see this is that Hulu did this out of desperation. I don't think Hulu wanted to do this.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They had to do this.
Hulu didn't care about this whatsoever. They just saw the demand for it and was like, okay, finally, they give in. This is something that people have been asking for so long.
Yeah.
That they just finally gave in.
But it's not even the asking. It's the fact that people are not subscribing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. They've lost momentum. You know, Hulu had a lot of momentum at one point when they started adding a lot of these original series, and that's the advantage over Netflix, where Hulu gets new shows that are current, immediately. So if Scandal is on, you could access Scandal on Hulu immediately. You could access TV shows immediately. You do not have that with Netflix. Netflix is more for, out-of-date shows or previous season shows. You're not getting the latest and the greatest on Netflix. And that's all I'm watching, guys. I only watch Netflix and Hulu, mostly. Unless it's sports. That's when I watch cable. So it's interesting. I'm curious to see how well they do with this and if they see subscription numbers go up or people just don't care and they're forgotten about. Yeah. Windows 10? John, 75 million users, 5% of the market. They're probably above that now. When this came out, they were at 5%, but they're probably at the entire market share for Macs by this point. This is a very good sign.
There is a lot of computers that this thing auto-downloaded on.
Oh,
Let
yeah.
Let me tell you.
It did. And on mine, it auto-downloaded. It has not installed. But guess what's happening
By the
now?
Way, I did not sign up for a reservation, but it's still downloaded.
Did it really?
Yes. It's on my PC.
Interesting.
And I did not sign up for a reservation.
Interesting.
So now I have 8 gigabytes being taken up by an installation that I have no idea what I want to do with.
Interesting.
On my SSD. And that is not okay with me.
Interesting. I had it auto-download on a couple of my machines, and now I cannot do a Windows update on those.
The whole upgrade installation thing that they have for Windows 10, I think, is quite a bit flawed.
Okay.
The process has a lot of issues and a lot of places where it can go wrong. And Microsoft does not do a very good job of smoothing out that process if there's an error. Because one of the main errors you get is something has gone wrong.
Yeah, I did have that.
Or something happened. And that's all it tells you. It doesn't tell you anything more.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing to go off of that to troubleshoot it.
Well, I had an issue with the initial installation on this Lenovo in front of me. I tried to do an ISO install, and that was a big mistake. What I should have done was did an upgrade and then wiped everything out afterwards. That would have been the best way to do this. I just did a clean install on a new hard drive, and yeah. I had a lot of issues. I had a lot of problems getting this thing to install. So at the end of the day, I had to create a Windows.
They don't want you to do a clean install.
No, no. They do not want you to do a clean install because they know that that's a little bit of a pain in the butt for most people. So they want to make it as difficult as possible.
But they've made it more
that.
Difficult for the people that do. And
my
that's
question
the
is,
problem.
My question is, if you have a hard drive, if you're getting a new hard drive, how do you install Windows 10 on this?
You have to clone the hard drive. You have to clone your drive first to the new hard drive.
No, that's a little bit of a pain, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, this is a free upgrade, and it's, you know, if you're going and buying a copy of Windows 10, you're not going to experience a lot of these problems because now you have a CD key and everything is fine. But if you're doing the upgrade and you're planning on, you know, getting a new hard drive, you have to install a prior version of Windows. Go to, you know, whatever the
that's
latest.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways around that now, I guess.
Now,
I think there was a method published
yeah.
that kind of got you around it to a degree. But you still have to use a previous version of Windows to do it first. where you have to, you still have to basically go through the process, but once you start the process, there's a way to trick it into completing it when you do a clean install.
Well, on the other side, I know a lot of people that have upgraded to Windows 10, and they are very happy with their process, and they're very happy with the operating system, and they absolutely love it. So, and those people,
I'm still mixed.
Yeah. Well, you have very specific needs.
Yes.
Like Media Center. You have your little crew now.
Microsoft hung those people out to dry. Plain and simple. The only bone they threw was a standalone DVD application that no Windows Media Center user really gives a crap about, because there's freaking a zillion other free programs out there that you can get for free that you can play DVDs on, rather than giving Microsoft $15 for a DVD player.
Well, I like that.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I really like the fact that you and I want to say about 10 people in our chat room are the last of the holdouts. I mean, this is like your Waco.
Well, look at it.
You're hanging on for dear life.
This is a sampling. There are people out there.
Yeah, there is. There are people out there. Yeah.
We're not a huge network. We don't have a huge following like other networks or other podcasts out there. And there are people out there in our chat room that are the same as me that have an issue with the lack of Windows Media Center.
Yeah, and listen, I think a lot of people are going to have that issue. But they're having the issue because there is a lack of competition. I mean, what is the second best thing for media outside of Media Center right now?
There isn't.
But what's your other option?
If you're a cable card user, there isn't.
There isn't.
Windows Media Center for cable card users is the only application that can read and play back the copy-protected channels such as HBO and Showtime.
And there's nothing else. No other software.
There is absolutely no other software that does cable card as far as I know.
Wow. Wow.
So as a cable card user, what do I use? Can't use Plex. That doesn't do live TV and cable card. There's a couple other next PVR, but I don't think that does cable card either. Embreed, that doesn't do live TV at all. There was one other one.
Assassin?
People say Myth
is that
TV,
it?
But Myth
Assassin?
TV is a complicated piece of crap
isn't
software.
Isn't there Assassin?
Never heard of that.
Let's see. Assassin HTCP. HTTP.
I have never heard of that before in my life.
Assassin, yeah. This is a...
What is that, from like 2004?
No, this is new. And they make hardware. Oh, I wonder if the hardware is just you relying on Windows Media Center.
There's a lot of stuff that still, even if you get it, relies on Windows Media Center.
It's running Kodi.
Yeah.
But Kodi is relying...
Kodi is not a Windows Media Center replacement if you're a live TV user.
Yeah. Interesting.
It has live TV capabilities, but it still relies in part on you having Windows Media Center to bring in that tuner.
I don't know if this article is
so
anything.
What alternative is there for somebody that uses a cable card in Windows Media Center?
Here's I just posted a link to AV Forums. I don't know if this is any help, but that's the first thing that I found when I put in alternative, and I don't see too many of them. So
no.
That is not a good sign.
That's an old thread anyway.
Okay, yeah. Go into another story, John.
Oh, that means I got to actually look at stuff.
You got to look at the notes.
So Comcast Gigabyte Internet should be finished rolling out by 2018, they said. The cable company's network architecture VP explains to Fierce Cable that the broadband technology needed for this kind of service, the DOCSIS 3.1 standard, should reach the entire customer base within 2 to 3 years or no later than 2018.
Now, you have DOCSIS 3.1, right?
I think it's just 3.0 in this area.
It is, okay.
I think there's very few areas that have 3.1.
Yeah, right now the Gigabit Pro subscribers are paying $300 a month right now.
Yeah, and that's 2 gigabytes per second.
Oh, that's 2 gigs. 2 gigabytes.
Versus
that's
the 1 gigabyte per second, which would be for most customers.
Yeah, and how much would that be?
No idea. They haven't said.
It's a lot. That's a lot of speed. You know what's fascinating? Fios has kind of fallen behind, haven't they?
I love the fact that they're looking for a large-scale nationwide rollout of this. If they can do that, I definitely commend them for doing that. Of course, the downside to that is how much are they going to charge for this? If they're charging $300 right now for a gigabit pro, which is 2 gigabytes per second, so judging by that, they're going to charge $150 for 1 gigabyte, and that's possibly a little bit too much for internet. I mean, not only that, but then they're also going to have to look at data caps. There was another article that came out this week about Comcast looking to charge a flat rate of $30 per month for trial users to get rid of their data caps. And I'm not sure that that's a good way to go either. And if we're going to have these data caps, if you've got that kind of speed, if you got 1 gigabyte per second down, dude, data caps, why have them?
Yeah, well, the data caps, you know, the data caps are going to be a thing of the past eventually with more online streaming and content streaming. People are eating up a lot of bandwidth. And before things like Netflix and Hulu and YouTube,
I can understand
it was always the pirates, right? They blamed the BitTorrent. Well, they're doing this for your own good to prevent piracy, and people are using upload and download for this kind of stuff. But
now there are those people that use a ridiculous amount.
Like me.
I'm talking like two terabytes per month of bandwidth.
Well, we use a lot.
That, I think, is on the ridiculous side. If you're dialing that much data and you're not a business that is
there's something going
a data
on.
Business, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's alarming, right? And they look at that. Like
we do video, and I don't even go through that much.
Okay, but let's do some math, quick math, John. We did this once before, and I cannot remember what we came up with. But our data, we're constantly pushing for, let's say, 10 megabits per second, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wasn't it like it was either 2 or 20 terabytes per month?
It was something ridiculous. I think it was 2. I think we were doing 2 terabytes, not terabits, terabytes a month.
Something like
that. What's the Verizon soft cap that they have that they start freaking out at? I think like 10.
I have no idea.
So we're not there, but they did add a panel in Verizon now. If you access like the Verizon when I go to pay my bill, it'll say like your data usage and like compared to other customers, and mine is like max. I'm like in the
one. Of course it is.
It's like I'm in the 1% of users that use this much data, and we have 2 separate lines, and they're both maxed out. I mean that we use like a tremendous amount, according to them. And they're like, hey, you know what we recommend for you? And this is it's interesting. They go, we recommend our 500x500 package for you since you're a high bandwidth user.
Uh-huh.
What does the speed have to do with my usage? I think that's their way of saying. I think that's their way of saying, like, hey, listen, if you we recommend you move up to the upper, the higher package.
Listen, I'm telling you, the faster you go, the more you download. That's just the way it is, and not only that, but there's just even with 4K coming out, and Netflix starting to do 4K content, and Amazon starting to do 4K content, those are bigger files.
You also have to look at the fact: what are people able to push to you? You could have the downloads you want, but if you can't get that much of, if you're
a lot of that still also depends on the route and other people between destination.
It's not going to help you load a website any quicker, going from 100 to 500. You know what I mean?
It doesn't because there's so much crappy network infrastructure.
I'll tell you something. I'll give you an example, John. I had to BitTorrent something the other day.
Yeah.
It was not something illegal that I had to BitTorrent. I had to BitTorrent something that I had access to once and I possessed, and I cannot find it for the life of me. So I had to BitTorrent it.
Yeah, like a Windows 7 Home Premium.
Like Windows 7 Home Premium.
Microsoft doesn't really let you download it anymore.
It wasn't Windows 7 Home Premium. It was something really obscure that I know that I could get on BitTorrent. I couldn't get it anywhere else. And it was not pornography. For the first time in my life, I saw tremendous speeds on BitTorrent with this one file. I was getting like 12 megs, 12 megabytes. I've never gotten speeds like that before. It's always around 2.5-3 megs.
It's great, isn't it?
Oh, my God. I was shocked. I was shocked.
Fantastic when things go that quick.
I was so surprised because I've never seen. And listen, I don't BitTorrent. I mean, this is like
a 10 gigabyte file in 5 minutes. That's freaking awesome.
This was the first time I've BitTorrent something in about a year and a half. and I was blown away. So this means that people have more upload speed and people are able to, you know, upload. And you know, we all know how BitTorrent works. But at the end of the day, it means people have more speed now. And that's a great sign. But if you have 500 by 500 and all you could send to someone is 2 megs, that's it. It's useless. You don't need 500 at the
That's a realistic problem.
That is a realistic problem.
Because we have that exact problem.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that, right? And that this is a great example.
There are times where I'll download a file from you, and the most I can get is like 2 megabytes per second.
Which is equivalent to, let's say, 25 megabits. Right?
Something like that.
Okay. Okay. So I have 150 by 150 and 75 by 75. I have two separate lines. On the 150 by 150, John and I transfer files to each other. He'll download a file from me and upload it to me. He cannot get above 2 megs. 2 megabytes, not megabits.
Nope. I can download multiple files, though, and exceed that.
Yes, you could download multiple files, but you are, for that one file, you cannot exceed 2 megs, which is bizarre. I don't understand it. We have yet to figure out why that is.
And I've tried multiple ways to transfer that file.
And no matter what you try, no matter what service you use,
whether it's FTP, SFTP, or HTTP, I've tried 3 protocols.
You've done VPN also. You've done a VPN connection to me. Try getting it. No go. We've tried multiple machines on different internet providers. No go. So there is obviously some sort of issue between us.
Yes.
We've just given up on trying to solve
this. It's not Comcast, and it's not Verizon. It's somebody in the middle.
It's someone in the middle. And how do you fix that?
You don't.
How do you fix a broken hop somewhere?
You don't.
You can't. You just got to let them. You know what you got to do? You got to cross your fingers, pray to the gods that something catastrophic happens.
At this point, I just don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
Because downloads when it downloads.
Yeah, it's out of your control.
It'd be great if it would download faster, because I know for a fact I can pull down at 14 megabits per second.
14 megabytes.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is tremendous. So, I mean, you were kind of stuck in limbo right now with this, right? But kind of going back to what we were saying, you could have a 1 gig connection. If there's a problem between you and another person, or you and the website, and you and the whatever, CDN, you're going to get whatever they could send you. And that's it. Now, it is worth saying, you know, that 1 gig is spread out. You could do a lot more. You're never going to use all of it. You're never going to cap out. You're never going to max out on that speed. But it is interesting to see how things have jumped in the last 2 years. You know, 2 years ago, John, you were on a really crappy connection. You were barely able to send me video, HD video.
Oh, yeah. I think there was other issues with that, though.
Sure, but excuse me. They're working, you know, due to competition. And that's all it takes. Look at that, right? You have competition and people actually want to compete.
Yeah,
they actually
want to try. Complaining on Twitter never hurts.
Yeah, complaining on Twitter never works. Before we wrap up, let's talk about this last bit. Google has a new logo. This comes weeks after the announcement of a huge restructuring efforts to the company, where they're going to be splitting search, advertising, and the internet giant into several different organizations. And think of it as a holding group. Alphabet will be their holding group, and Google will be part of that holding group. They have now changed the font to something a little bit more modern, they're saying.
I don't know if I would say modern.
It's a little flatter.
The aesthetic of it is modern.
The aesthetic
font is not modern.
What font is it?
I don't know. It's like those letters that you see on kids' blocks.
Helvetica.
The ABC stuff. You
Times
know,
New Roman. Wingdings. I would like to see the Google font written in Wingdings.
You know, this is my problem with Google's new logo. It's not the color choices that I don't like. It's the style of font that I don't like.
You know what?
I understand the connection to it being Alphabet and it being an alphabet like, you know, that you normally see on child's play blocks, you know, the ABC thing, 1, 2, 3, whatever. That's what it looks like to me. And it just seems a little childish.
I, on the other hand, actually don't care. It does not. I honestly have no emotional connection to this font change. I mean, for me, but like, you know, you see things a little differently.
Yeah, no, it's when just it comes ridiculous. To stuff like that.
I think it's fine.
It's like they said in chat, it's a little bit cartoony.
It is a little cartoony.
And I don't think that's the problem I have with it. It's just a little bit too cartoony.
I think it's okay.
And I'm not saying they don't change it. Don't make it more flat. Don't get rid of the serifs. Just don't make it cartoony. And it's cartoony. And I think to tie in with Alphabet, it's just a little too far. They went a little too far.
They went a little too far. Listen, for me, it's whatever. It's who cares. All right, John. That's it for this week. We, you know, quick stories here and there. I like this new rapid fire update that we do. You know, now that the summer's over, we're going to be here every single week. We're back. We're going to be doing the show.
Are we?
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Are we sure?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I am very sure. I am 99.8% sure.
Well, let's see about that.
Oh, okay. Is that the challenge? John is challenging me. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to our podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. You could fund us by going to patreon.com/whatthetech. Patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there. If you buy something on Amazon, guys, use our Amazon link, gfq.co/Amazon. Every time you make a purchase, we get a small little credit from it. Bookmark it. So go to gfq.co/Amazon right now. Bookmark it. Put it on whatever you want. That'll remind you to use that link. And every time you go to Amazon, we get a small portion of that sale. Tiny percentage. And it really goes a long way. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. You can follow John at Suncast. You can follow the GFQ Network at GFQ Network. And that's it for this week, guys. We'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye for now.